And now we're turning our attention to severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, which we've discussed on Monday's program. Since then, there have been a number of serious developments concerning the issue. Groups ranging from the World Health Organization to America's Major League Baseball are warning visitors to Toronto to take precautions against contracting SARS. Meanwhile, the epidemic continues to take a toll in China. In Beijing, officials have ordered elementary schools closed to check the spread of SARS as storekeepers deal with a rush of panic buying. Here in the United States, no one has yet died of SARS. Still, public health workers are remaining vigilant. What are your questions about this disease? Call us at 800-989-TALK, our email address is TOTN@npr.org, and that number again, 800-989-8255. Here to take your questions about SARS is Stephen Morse. He's the director of the Center for Public Health and Preparedness at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. He joins us by phone from his office in New York City. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Delighted to join you.
First, let's review some of the developments this week concerning the incidences of SARS. World Health Organization made some comments about Toronto. What's the situations there?
Well, right now there are a number of cases in Canada, and Canada is one of the few places where there are local chains of transmission, that is to say where there are actually some cases outside of hospitals or healthcare workers. And Toronto is one of the earliest places to get cases of SARS, and I think is a situation we're all watching and going to be learning from as the situation evolves. Obviously, Canada has an excellent health care, an excellent public health system, and they're very much on top of the situation. In China, of course, as you know, the situation continues to unfold, and there's a lot of work being done there right now, including investigations in the original parts of South China where the disease was first seen, and that'll give us important insights into how it started, give us some insights into how we might prevent future occurrences.
Mm-hmm. Back to Toronto, it was felt, I think, earlier in the week that Toronto might have this under control, but things have gotten a little bit worse in recent days, in terms of numbers of people and so forth.
Yes, and they've also seen some transmission in some close contact settings like a church and some other places where people were congregating in large numbers. So that obviously gets serious attention from the public health authorities, since any disease that can be transmitted from person to person, even under close contact situations, obviously bears very careful watching. And Canada, Toronto, is one of the few places where there have been some local cases in the community rather than just in hospitals. Some of the cities in Asia also have that distinction.
Well, we want to get as many calls as we can in before the end of the hour. So let's go, first of all, to John in Columbus, Ohio. Hello, John.
How are you doing, boss?
I'm doing well.
More than a question, I have a comment. I just returned from Toronto on Monday. I travel there frequently. It's not unusual for me to visit there 10, 12, 15 times a year. My fiance lives there. And you know, that's a city about the size of Chicago. Perhaps since amalgamation, it's even larger. And I kind of get the feeling that the World Health Organization is overreacting. My fiance works downtown, goes into one of the many Chinatowns in Toronto for lunch and shopping all the time. Their businesses there are just being slammed by this, and yet thousands, tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of people move through the Chinese neighborhoods of Toronto every day, do not contract the disease. It doesn't affect people on the street in Peel or Durham or York or East York or, you know, any of these other surrounding areas. The only thing you heard on the media in Toronto this last weekend was about the nurse traveling in a closed compartment with possibly three or four other commuters, two trips before she realized that she had the condition.
Mm-hmm.
I really think they've got a handle on it there in Toronto, And I really feel like the World Health Organization went over the top with that.
Thanks, John.
You bet.
Thanks, John. Let's ask Steve Moore. So what do you think? Did the World Health Organization overreact?
No, this is a very difficult decision. You know, we don't have very many really good tools to contain the spread of an infection that can be spread person to person, especially these days of rapid air travel. And it's obvious that this disease has already come to a number of different places, many countries that have had a few cases. So the question is really, you know, what is the appropriate measure? How far do you go to try to prevent this from traveling further? And there are obviously different opinions about that. I think the WHO, to its credit, is trying to be proactive in trying to figure out how best to implement a way to keep this contained, to keep it from getting into new countries. And of course, that is a tremendously difficult thing. We don't have much historical experience, past historical experience, way back in the ancient days when they would have quarantines for plagues and things like that, generally suggests that sometimes it sends the wrong message to people. So public information is very important here, but I think it's an attempt to try to get ahead of the curve here, and some important lessons will be learned from this. I'm sorry that the fine people of Toronto, one of my favorite cities, as I'm sure it is for many others, I'm sorry that the poor people of Toronto, in a sense, are the leading edge in this particular attempt to figure out, you know, whether it's feasible to try to use travel restrictions as a way to contain spread. But unfortunately, it's a tough call, and we will learn something. I think something will be learned from the experience that will be useful to others and useful in the future.
Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona, and Joseph. Hello, Joseph.
Hello.
Hi. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes. I read online that the hospital in southern China, I believe Guangzhou, where they've treated more than 100 cases of SARS with Chinese herbal medicine and have a better track record than with modern medicine. And I wondered if you, and that the World Health Organization had investigated this and was continuing to, and I wonder if you know anything about it.
I don't have enough information to be able to comment on that, but right now our treatment for SARS is really symptomatic. And it's important to remember that, you know, the vast majority of people who get SARS, we call it severe because those are the cases we have most easily identified, but the vast majority of people who get SARS, you know, have a flu-like illness, they recover completely, and in most cases don't require extensive medical attention. For those who do, treatment is symptomatic, making sure that the symptoms are treated, that if they need respirators or some other support to be able to keep breathing during the worst part of this until their body takes over and starts to recover, you know, they get that kind of symptomatic support. It wouldn't surprise me to know that there are herbal medicines out there that could, in fact, improve lung function or might conceivably have some other activities. And obviously it's an area that is also always a fruitful area for future research.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Doug in Santa Cruz, California. Hello, Doug.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm 60 years old, and my wife is about 35. We're adopting a baby in China, and we're going to be going over there in the next 4 or 5 weeks probably. And there's some question of whether I should travel because of my age. And we're going into to Fuling in Guangdong province. So the point is it a real danger for me to be traveling at this time?
Steve
sure.
Morris?
And you know, in the context of this, you know, to think that the even in the hot spots of SARS, just to put it into sort of the broader context, you know, China is reporting, let's say, about 2,300 cases at the moment. Hong Kong, a little over 1,450, let's say, as of yesterday. So even in the hot spots, the statistical risk for any individual is relatively small. But, you know, of course, if one is unlucky enough to be in the wrong place at the right time, it's always possible.
Well, we got an email today from somebody who's been over there, just got back, and they were saying that when they arrived, they had heard all this news about everybody wearing masks and that, and they said they saw hardly anybody with masks on. They said that once in a while there would be people in public transportation maybe, but otherwise hardly anybody was you know, had masks or was really taking extra precautions.
And it's interesting, as you know, in Japan, they tend to wear masks when they're sick or during flu season. And we don't have much data on whether that helps, but one of the things we do in the hospital is to put masks on, when feasible, on patients who may have SARS to cut down on transmission. What I would say, obviously, you know, every individual, you have to make your own decision about that with whatever works for you. My general feeling, and this is, you know, just sort of very general advice, is first of all to see what the situation is closer to the time you're leaving. I think in the next few weeks, and if possible, you might want to try to reschedule it. I think in the next few weeks, we'll be seeing more of the epidemic unfolding, and I think we'll have a lot more information on the situation in China, which will make it easier to assess the risk. You know, I would personally be prudent, stay away from potential close contacts if I were to go. Try to go, obviously, at a time when hopefully the epidemic has settled down or is stabilizing. Keep on top of the situation, inform yourself well, you know, so that you can track what the situation is. But in general, you know, I think it's a matter of being prudent.
Mm-hmm. But we'll just have to say good luck, Doug.
Yeah.
And I have to say you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're taking your calls about SARS and reading your emails with Steve Morse from Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Here's an email from Nancy Ehrman. And she asks, is SARS a particular type of pneumonia, or does it lead to pneumonia in the same way the common cold can?
SARS is a clinical definition. In fact, it was originally described as an atypical pneumonia, and that's what first got people's attention, the cases in several hospitals in Asia, Vietnam, for example, Singapore, and in Toronto hospitals, you know, were seen as atypical pneumonia. So pneumonia is one of the features in the more severe cases. But there are many milder cases of SARS which very much resemble a flu or a bad cold, and we'll probably hear more about that as tests become available to find some of those milder cases and differentiate them from those other common respiratory infections. But in the more severe versions, indeed, there is a pneumonia.
She also asked, does it provide any protection to have a pneumonia shot?
There are various things called pneumonia shots. The commonest one is Pneumovax and similar vaccines for a bacterial pneumonia. This is an organism that of which there are a number of different variants, but that's a common cause of bacterial pneumonia, especially in the elderly and also in children. And it doesn't provide protection against SARS or any of these other viral pneumonias. It does provide protection against that specific type of bacterial pneumonia.
Let's take one more quick call from Joel in Chandler, Arizona. Hello, Joel.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I just traveled to Beijing early in March, and I'm curious if we know of cases where people can be carriers but not necessarily express symptoms.
Steve Morse, we have about 30 seconds. Can you tell us?
You know, of course, the information is still evolving, but right now it looks like only people who really have symptoms are in a situation to transmit. So we haven't seen healthy carriers yet.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. Steve Morse is the director of the Center for Public Health and Preparedness at Columbia University's School of Public Health. He joined us by phone from his office in Manhattan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm John Itstein.